Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Jim Rawls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, the novel, as you call it, The Patriots, a novel of the coming collapse. That's kind of scary. It's a scary cover there, Jim.
Well, it's kind of a scary book. But again, I did make it a little bit worse scenario than I actually anticipate. Nobody wants to read a action-adventure novel and have nothing happen. So I did put the characters through some pretty horrendous events. And again, if you're prepared for the worst, you could handle anything lesser in stride.
Now, what about also, though, helping your neighbors? You know, we talked about keeping things quiet, not broadcasting things. What if you want to become, you know, the friendly person of the neighborhood? Not quite Mr. Rogers, but, you know, you want to help people.
There's a couple of different approaches. One is you play secret squirrel and you don't let anyone know about your preparations. The other is that you're more upfront about it, but you are the coordinator for a local neighborhood watch, and everyone in the neighborhood will be looking to you for guidance, and they'll also want to protect you because you're going to be the one that's coordinating everything, and you're going to be the one that's handling the communications and also providing the intelligence because you're going to be the one with the ham radio station. So there's two different ways of approaching it, and I don't believe in halfway measures. You should either go completely one way or the other, because if you get into a situation where you are well prepared and a few people learn about it, but yet you're not proactive about coordinating security for your neighborhood, you're going to end up getting picked on.
All right, to the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Robin, where are you calling from there?
I'd like to know about the seeds. You know, what kind of seeds can you get?
Well, I recommend stocking up on what are called non-hybrid or heirloom variety seeds, also called open pollinated seeds. And those are seeds that have not been hybridized, so they breed true generation after generation.
Like the old days.
Where do you get them?
Old-fashioned seeds. They're available by mail order from a number of different companies. But make sure that you only buy the heirloom varieties, open-pollinated varieties.
Okay, this might sound weird, but, you know, I get water off my roof to water my garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get that junk, you know, from the shingles. Is that a problem?
And that's not a major problem. But what you should probably do is, before you fill your rain barrels for your garden, is if you have a diverter on your downspout, is when you have your first big fall rain and at the beginning of any large storm system that comes through, have the downspouts operate in normal mode where they go onto the ground for the first 20 minutes of the rainfall and then divert into the barrels. And that way, if you have a composition roof, all the little particulate matter off of the comp roof is going to end up on the ground rather than in your rain barrels.
Oh, okay. And you were talking about, like, moving out to more remote. Would that be how far away from different cities? And what
Well, you want to be at least one tank of gasoline away from any major city. And when you get on into the East Coast area, that's kind of hard to do because you've got a pretty heavy population density. But west of the Missouri River, that's quite doable.
Okay, what about batteries?
What sort of mean batteries for flashlights and radios?
Yeah,
I recommend primarily storing nickel metal hydride batteries, the NIMH batteries, and you want preferably the latest type, which are what they call an LSD nickel metal hydride battery, which stands for low self discharge. The earlier nickel metal hydride batteries discharge themselves fairly rapidly. If you get the LSD variety of the NIM batteries, NIMH, you're going to have a battery that's going to be quite useful through hundreds of charges. And in addition to a typical 12-volt wall charger or 120-volt wall charger, I recommend that people also get an automobile charging tray for batteries. Those are sold through a number of different companies. I think C. Crane might even sell one.
And you're right. And also the LED flashlights are phenomenal.
Right, because LEDs draw very little current, and you can get a tremendous amount of life out of batteries if you're going LED rather than traditional filament bulbs. So if you have a standard wall charger to keep your batteries topped off regularly, and then a 12-volt charger, which you can use to charge your batteries from your car or from a small alternative power system, and there you're talking you wouldn't need more than a 10 to 15 watt panel to keep a few batteries charged for emergency communications and flashlights. It's essentially all you need for a small system. And you can run that 12 volt system much more efficiently. I have people write me all the time saying, well, I'm kind of confused about my power system. See, I've got this battery charging tray, but it uses 120 volt power. So I would plug that into my inverter, and then I'd plug that into my battery bank. And I have to explain to people that's incredibly inefficient, because you're going from DC power through to an AC inverter to a DC transformer to charge batteries, when you can actually just be going straight DC to DC. It's much more efficient.
Okay, next up we go to Chris in Windsor. Where are you?
I'm right here.
Okay.
Good morning, George. How are you doing today?
Good.
It's good. Thanks for having me on. It's been a long time. It's good to hear from you again.
You too.
You were speaking, Jim, about the medical training. I'm an officer in the XEMT, and I'm very, very interested in learning how to get into that program. Could you tell me how?
Well, yeah, just through your local volunteer fire department, most of them have, at least in small towns, a EMT branch. And if you express an interest in training and you're under about 55 years old, most of them will actually pay for your training if you make yourself available for the training.
Oh, wow.
And of course, you're going to be on call for emergencies, and you'll have a certain number of on-call hours per month, but you'll actually get paid for that time with most of the departments. So it's training that's well worth getting, and again, it won't cost you a dime.
The one thing that I know is ours happens to be more volunteer, because it's not a very it's a small town that doesn't have a heck of a lot of money. Would there be another alternative besides that?
Well, you can get involved with a search and rescue organization, mm-hmm. Like the American Ski Patrol. You could get involved with the Civil Air Patrol. They offer some medical training as well. You can also take low-cost training through the American Red Cross, although their most of it doesn't go too much beyond basic first aid and CPR training.
That's where I started years ago. But I want to get into the end where you're talking about for minor surgeries and et cetera. I'd love to move forward into something like that.
Well, take a look at what's available locally. Do contact your local volunteer fire department. You might be pleasantly surprised to find that they'll subsidize your training, or at least, you might have to pay your own travel costs, but they'll probably pay for the course itself.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Good to hear from you again as well. Let's go next to Jan in New York on the wildcard line. Hi, Jan.
Howdy. A quick comment and a question. The comment about anthrax, people do not know the terrible ramifications that happened in New York City and Washington, D.C. They now have these terrible scanners in the post office, and if you send any vitamins or stuff through it, it completely almost destroys the vitamins, the energy. A vitamin company mentions that. Now, my question is this. What food do you think would be good to store?
Well, I recommend that you have a variety of storage foods. First, start out with the regular staple foods that you use on a regular basis, like pasta, wheat and rice, honey, wholesome foods that store well. Things like dried beans, there you have a limit of about a six-year shelf life, because they get so hard that they won't soften with any amount of soaking. You can only prepare them with a pressure cooker at that point. But start out with your staple foods, your basic canned foods that you use on a regular basis, and you're basically going to just double up or triple up on what you buy it in your regular grocery shopping and store up a supply. You're going to mark the dates with a Sharpie pen on the top of every can and on every package of pasta, for example, and just stock up in larger quantity. Beyond that, I think it's important that every family have a short-term supply of what I call get-out-of-dodge food, which would be something like military rations like Meals Ready to Eat, the MRE, or the civilian equivalent to those. And then for your longest-term storage, that you buy commercially packaged foods that are designed for storage life up to 30 years, and that would be your bulk dehydrated milk, powdered milk, and some of your freeze-dried foods that are nitrogen-packed, designed for extremely long shelf life. And those you're not going to rotate on a regular basis as much as you would your regular canned goods. But by having three different types of supplies like that, you'll be prepared for just about any emergency.
And even on a
very limited budget, just by doubling up on the staple foods that you use on a regular basis, you can get miles ahead of your neighbors in terms of food storage. Again, the average family only has 3 days worth of food on hand.
Let's talk about training again, Jim. You think that's very important, don't you?
I do. I stress training throughout my writings, in my blog and in my books. If without the training, the tools are essentially useless. Unless you really have practiced gardening, having gardening tools and seed doesn't help you. You really have to get your hands dirty. Unless you take the training to go with first aid equipment and minor surgery equipment, you're actually more of a hazard than you are a help. Ditto for firearms. If you have a gun but don't have that gun zeroed and you're not mechanically familiar with that gun and you haven't practiced shooting that gun under the stress of a shooting course, you're not going to be competent and confident with that gun to defend your family.
Good point. Next up, let's go to Dennis, truck driving in Ohio. Dennis, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hey, great show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Hey, can I offer just one comment about guns briefly?
Yep.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I grew up in Western Michigan. I think you're probably familiar with that. And I took home ec, we had a sewing project, and the girls sewed dresses and whatnot. Well, the guys all sewed gun cases, so we all brought our guns to school, and they just told us make sure they were unloaded.
Those are the good old days. Nowadays, they call out the SWAT team on them.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, question. We have a natural gas fireplace with a flame pilot. Is that going to be of any benefit in the wintertime if electrical catastrophe should occur?
Well, yes, of some utility. The problem is it probably has electrically powered forced air to circulate that heated air throughout your house.
I'm sorry. It has a blower, but it's a freestanding stove, I should say.
Right. Okay. So that freestanding stove will heat the room that it's in, but without the blower, you're not going to push that air to the other parts of the house.
Okay.
So it's going to have marginal utility. I generally recommend that people install either a wood stove or a coal-fired stove, depending on where you live.
Okay.
And the one thing to avoid is a pellet stove. Pellet stoves are all the rage right now, but they require electricity to drop the pellets in. You're not going to want to stand there and drop a pellet into your stove once every 5 minutes by hand.
Yeah.
That would get really old in a hurry. So pellet stoves are essentially useless in a situation where the power grid goes down.
And I assume you should, make your house your castle when this happens, right?
Absolutely. And you really need to work from the outside in. Think in terms of your fencing. Think in terms of an intrusion detection system. The one that I like the best is the Dakota Alert, which uses a passive infrared sensor, and it broadcasts actually a radio alert in the MERS band, which is right next to the 2-meter band. And you can have on your hip a walkie-talkie that you can use for push-to-talk, to do tactical communications, to coordinate security with your neighbors, and it will alert you when someone comes in your driveway or or a trail coming in the back end of your property, it'll say alert zone one, alert zone one, and you'll know immediately that you have a threat approaching. And then work your way in. Think in terms of planting rose bushes under every window, for example, to build a natural barrier.
Good point. With the pricklers on them, huh?
Sure, yeah, and other prickly plantings.
Yeah.
And then bars for your windows is a logical thing to do. Beef up your doors. If you have antiquated doors, you really want to beef up and go to metal doors. And think in terms of multiple deadbolts. I like to, it looks a little strange, but I like to actually put a deadbolt top, middle, and bottom on the door and make sure that the door frame itself is securely attached with long lag bolts so someone can't just knock the whole door frame in. And then in terms of security within the house, for a worst case scenario, you actually should lay in a supply of sandbags so that you could actually build fighting positions. It may sound strange, but if we have an absolute worst case, you might actually have to defend your home with rifle fire.
What are some of the things people tend to overlook generally?
Oh boy, there's a lot. The one that people seem to overlook the most is communications.
Yeah.
People just assume that they'll always be able to pick up a cell phone or their landline and that it's always going to work even in a power failure. But what most people don't realize is that the telephone company's central offices and the cell phone towers only have a limited amount of backup power. At the central offices, they've got enormous banks of 2-volt batteries to provide the ringing voltage for the system. And then they have backup generators, but only a limited amount of fuel on hand. So in a worst case scenario, you could have a situation where you would have difficulty communicating with your neighbors unless everyone is equipped with a small photovoltaic panel to trickle charge batteries and CB radios or something on the order of military surplus field telephones. So communications is definitely overlooked.
And it's this entire package. It's almost like a checklist. The book helps people, I think, a lot.
Yeah, in fact, I have a list in the book that I call my list of lists. And it's important that people go systematically through and don't feel overwhelmed. You know, it's a lot to handle, but if you go through it systematically and reprioritize your budget and cut out unnecessary expenses like, you know, foreign travel and maybe sell your jet ski, sell your big screen TV. How important is that versus being able to feed your family?
That's right. Jim, stay with us with final phone calls with you. In the next hour, we talk about this 2012 signal impending apocalypse or global enlightenment. Okay, Skype is open. Our next Coast to Coast program will be live in San Diego because the next day we're being... going to the museum there in San Diego for the Science of Aliens. COGO, our affiliate in San Diego, is putting on this great event. It's from 10 a.m. to noon. And information on that on the coasttocoastam.com website down there at the bottom left on the calendar page. COGO has been giving out free tickets for this event, so they may be doing that again tomorrow. So just listen to 600 a.m. down in San Diego. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we'll go down to our final calls now with our guest, Jim Rawls. Let's go to Sacramento, California on the Skype line. John, we've got you. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I was curious, Mr. Rawls, you're talking about moving out of the cities to a less populated area, almost like you're expecting something. Are you expecting something?
Well, as I mentioned in the first hour, I think that the current recession we're in, there's a fairly high likelihood that we could have it morph into a decades-long depression. And if that were to happen, I think the cities would be very uncomfortable places to live, very unsafe places to live. And I think it's prudent that if people have the opportunity to move to a lightly populated area, whether they're retiring or if they're self-employed or they have a form of income that is portable, where they can work just about anywhere, that they go ahead and move. Take the opportunity to move now, because if you think that you're just going to have a cabin in the mountains somewhere stocked with food and that you're going to be able to get there at the 11th hour, you may be kidding yourself.
Would other countries be under similar problems?
Yes, and it all depends on the population density. Here in the United States, we have a situation where 2% of the population is feeding the other 98% of the population. We have a huge division of labor. In a lot of second world and third world countries, you have more, agrarian types of situations with more, living off the land kind of things. Basically wherever you live, you're going to have the same kind of security situation. Here in the States, we've got a situation where the cities will be very unsafe, and it'll be relatively much safer if you're a couple of hours drive away from the major cities and you're living in a food producing region. For a worst case scenario, if we do have a grid down situation, if you're in a area with reliable rains where farming can go on even without grid power and without dependence on electrically pumped irrigation water, I think people are going to get by much better in those areas.
What about police? What about the National Guard? What happens during this kind of a crisis?
Well, in most situations, the police are still going to be showing up for work. The National Guardsmen will still be reporting. But in an absolute worst-case situation, it could literally be so bad that the police are afraid to leave their own homes for fear of leaving their own families unprotected. It could get that bad.
Okay, next up we go to Pocatello, Idaho. First-time caller is Paul. Paul, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. There's a treatise that seemed to help me a great deal about in some of the areas that aren't typically spoken of too much, and I think the publication is called Surviving in Argentina.
Yes, that's written by a gentleman by the name of Fernando Aguirre.
Excellent.
And he's posted on the internet for many years under the pen name Fairfal, F-E-R-F-A-L, the F-A-L standing for a Belgian battle rifle. He has a blog that's called Surviving in Argentina. I do recommend most of his writings, although he's written a few things that are quasi-racist, which I can't abide by. But he has gone through personally some pretty heavy-duty turmoil with the currency problems they went through and inflation in Argentina a few years back. And ever since then, they've had a very high crime rate, and he's had to deal with that as well. So from his personal experiences, he does have some good things to share.
Okay, next up we go to Helena, Montana. Adrian, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Okay, thank you.
First-time caller, 15-year listener.
Wow, good.
I should probably say that I listen to you every night on my CC Pocket SW.
All right, you like it. Good, super.
I did. I called in tonight. I actually made special plans to make sure that I heard this show tonight. About a month ago at a gun show, a friend of mine gave me The End of the World as We Know It. And that night, I went home and read the entire book. What really impressed me was this: the first book like this that I've read, that you didn't feel it was like militia-driven. It has so much good common sense information that you can use in this book. I was really impressed with your talk about the firearms. Like I said, most books you read, it's you need 15 AK-47s, you need five M16s, you need all of this and that and this. And, you know, the stuff that you laid out as far as weapons that you would need are things that here in Montana we're growing up knowing.
Right, practical guns.
Exactly.
Yeah, I talk about as much about shooting pests and shooting small game and big game as I do the situations where you're up against two-legged predators, because it's all going to be important.
It's got to be. It's critical.
Yep. It's part of feeding your family. Defending your family and feeding your family is what privately owned firearms are all about.
Let's go back to
survival context.
Follow up, Adrian. Go ahead.
Yes, if something, because if something happens, it's more likely going to be a small thing like that. I wanted to let people know, too, that these things don't necessarily cost a lot of money. In fact, they can be free. Food storage. My local grocery store is more than willing to give me their empty 5-gallon food-grade buckets and lids, which I fill all the time. Communications. I picked up a Cable shortwave radio and a Cobra 148 GTL combined for $80.
That's
now,
great.
I had one question. Since the Cobra and the shortwave is kind of an in-house base type of a station, what I've done was, I know that you said in your book that, you know, you put your smaller radios like in an ammo can and seal them up with a padding around them. What I have done is I have gone to the store and bought about 10 old microwaves and ripped them apart and took all the screens out that, you know, that stopped the microwaves from coming out.
Unfortunately, the wavelength of EMP is broadband, and the screens that are built into microwave ovens are specifically tailored for one particular wavelength in the microwave range. So it's not going to give you full protection from EMP like a full metal can will do. You're actually better off putting your electronic components in a galvanized garbage can, buy a brand new garbage can with a tight-fitting lid, and you'll do better than putting them in a microwave oven or using microwave oven screens. Also, you were calling from Montana?
Yes.
Okay. In Montana, your risk of EMP would only be in a full-scale nuclear exchange, because Montana is not likely to be a terrorist target. But, of course, you still have missile fields in central Montana to worry about, which are nuclear targets, and then you'd have localized EMP to worry about. So, yes, EMP could be a concern, but only in that particular scenario.
Okay, next up we go to Arroyo, California. Rebo, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Rebo.
Hello, gentlemen. I wanted to share with the listeners about the hobo stove. It's a really inexpensive type of lighting and heating. It consists of rubbing alcohol. It has to be over 90%. You can get a 24-ounce bottle of rubbing alcohol just about anywhere, gas stations, department stores, but it has to be over 90%. And then you get yourself a little Vienna sausage can. You tear off the paper and you empty out and you eat the sausage. And then you get some toilet paper about 2 feet long, and you roll it up, and then you shove it down inside the can. Then you take the rubbing alcohol, and you pour it inside the can until it comes almost all the way to the top. With just a little bit of the paper hanging above the water, you light it up. You got yourself a stove. Stay nice and warm if you're in the weather, and it's really inexpensive. Rubbing alcohol only costs like a couple dollars, and you get like 8 to about 10 hours of lighting and heating for only $3 out of the 24-ounce bottle. Just wanted to share. It's called the Hobo. So it's similar to the Sterno. You know the Sterno, Jim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, there's plans for hobo stoves and also zip-type stoves, which you can burn twigs in, that you can find on the Internet. And I've had links to both of those in my blog.
Okay, next up we go to Santa Cruz, California, west of the Rockies. Chester, you're on with Jim Rawls.
Hi, Mr. Rawls. We want to thank you for your great books and the web-based survival blog. It's given me and my family so many different perspectives and ideas on keeping it together after a major negative change to society. We are all very happy and hope and pray that our country is not going to have a problem like that and will remain strong and free. But we realize that all these forces that are working against us, and so we never know what to expect.
Okay.
Probably the biggest positive thing that I've gotten from the survival blog was getting introduced to Front Sight Firearms Training Institute. I've taken several classes there with my sons, built up our firearm skills, and realized what a great program they have. In fact, I just received my 912 lifetime membership card in the mail today. So we plan on keeping on going down there and getting as trained as we can.
What do you think of training like that, Jim?
Well,
I think it's excellent. Both my late wife and myself both took training at Front Sight, and we loved it. I was an Army veteran, and I thought I knew a lot about firearms until I actually went to Front Sight. And that's where I learned how much I didn't know. The training is fairly intense, but they don't have a drill sergeant attitude. They're very friendly trainers. You will learn a tremendous amount, and you will leave from a 3-day or 4-day course tremendously confident and competent with a firearm, and I highly recommend it. I recommend that people take both the defensive handgun course and the rifle courses. They are excellent.
Okay, we go now to Niagara Falls, east of the Rockies. Ed, it's your turn. Ed, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Jim, you had mentioned the wood-burning stoves and that. Mm-hmm. There are fans you can buy that sit on top, and they're heat-generated, and they will push that air around the room.
Right, we just talked about those in Survival Blog a week ago. It's actually a nifty system that actually... it's an electric fan that's powered by the heat of the stove itself. And I had a link in my blog to a manufacturer of those. They work quite well.
When I was 50, I went back to school and became an EMT.
Oh, great.
The Lord knows why anyone at that age would do it. That's a young man's business, but I did it, so the basics are there. But my concern has been, I haven't done anything as far as water. Everything I'm doing is going to be water treatment and filtration because you can't carry it.
Right.
Any distance, the same with ammo, the same with weapons, basics, but you go with what you can carry, your precious metals. I know people that are stocking up, and I told them, I said, that's great for bugging out at home, but if you got to hit the road, who's going to carry all this? You're going to need a semi. And, there's all kinds of things that you can get. And like the one guy said, for free, you go to certain stores and you can buy a spork for like $3 or $4. Well, you can go to another fast food joint and you can get them for free.
Yeah, they hand them out with every meal. Yeah, one of the previous callers mentioned 5-gallon food grade HDPE plastic buckets. You can get them free free for the asking if you go to your local bakery or your local delicatessen. They throw them away. And often you can get them with lids. So, yes, it's just a matter of finding what's available free. In my blog just tonight, I posted an article about people that have the hobby of clipping coupons. You can literally get a lot of food items free if you use the right coupons on the right days.
You know what you're doing. You sure can.
Yeah, you can stock up a tremendous amount for very little money. So a lot of these preparedness measures are it's the old dollars to sweat ratio. You can either pour money at the problem, or you can spend a little bit of time and use your hours instead of your dollars, and have the same net result.
Let's go to Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Rick, it's your turn. You're on with us. Hi, Rick.
Yes. Hey, how are y'all?
Okay.
Hey, I got a question concerning communications.
All right.
Now, do you see any use for, like, the police scanner?
Mm-hmm. I recommend that you get a 800 megahertz range scanner. They go all the way up to 800 megahertz. And nowadays, the important thing to get is a scanner with trunking capability. A lot of the communications that are used by police departments are no longer just traditional push-to-talk simplex. They trunk the communications in a multi-channel fashion, and you can only demodulate that with a trunking capable scanner. So get one of the later generation scanners with trunking capability.
I had one of the old scanners a long time ago. I remember back in newsrooms, back in the 70s, I mean, we had little police scanners all over the place.
Yeah, and a lot of small town police departments and fire departments still use traditional communications without any scrambling and without trunking. But the majority of police departments and public service organizations are switching over to trunked communications and, in some cases, encryption. So it's important that you get the later generation scanners, especially if you live in the suburbs or the big cities.
What's a good scanner cost these days, Jim?
$200 to $300 for a nice one. But look for used equipment. If you know the good models, you've done your research, then watch eBay religiously, and you can, you know, find a sleeper auction once in a while and pick up something for 10 cents on the dollar.
That's not bad.
Again, it's the dollars to sweat ratio. If you take the time to watch for bargains, you can pick up some real inexpensive equipment.
John's in Las Vegas. We'll squeeze you in here, John. Go ahead.
Thanks for the show, guys.
Sure.
My question is speaking to force multipliers. Are you aware of any way to connect 12 or more separate mirrors, alert transmitters into one security station or base station?
The general limit is 4 to 6, and the best way to work that would be to have some separation and coordinate with your neighbors and have separate networks and then coordinate between those networks with push-to-talk. I don't know if with a standard Dakota alert, that's not possible with that technology unless you're going to use separate networks.
So let's paint the scenario. When could these things happen? Who knows, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, we really don't know. It's just important that as responsible heads of families that we prepare for our families to the best of our ability.
And it's not that expensive, is it?
It doesn't have to be. And if you work at it slowly and consistently, it's not a major lifestyle change. Yeah, it means giving up the occasional vacation. Yeah, it means selling your jet ski or your Hummel collection or whatever. But it doesn't have to be something where you have to put the rest of your life on hold. Just work at it slowly and consistently. Work through the list of lists that I have posted on my website or that's also in my book. And by getting squared away, you can sleep well at night knowing that you have done the best you can for your family to be prepared.
Absolutely. Jim, good luck with all your work. Keep in touch with us. I hope we don't have to tap into you for one of these catastrophes, but you never know.
Okay. And I'll be happy to be on again if you want to go over more specific details.
All right. Very good. Jim Rawls, author of a very special book called How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. Also, his other novel, Patriots. When we come back, we'll talk about the apocalypse or global enlightenment with 2012.